The title of my talk is Extremal Black Holes in Higher Dimensions and Higher Derivative Gravity, and I'll be talking mainly about this paper over here, and in the later half, some work in progress and some earlier work. And here I have listed some related complementary work to what I am going to talk about. So I'd like to dedicate this talk to the memory of Amol Kumar Raichaudhuri, who is the discoverer of the Raichaudhuri equation in cosmology, and who has been a source of inspiration for generations of Indian scientists. Professor Raichaudhuri passed away on June 18th of this year. So let me begin by giving you a brief motivation of what we want to study or why we want to study it. Now, as is well known, in N equal to 2 supergravity theory in 4 dimensions, there are some very nice results for extremal BPS black holes, and here are some of them. So in particular, near horizon values of the vector multiplied moduli fields are known to be independent of the asymptotic values of these moduli scalar fields. Instead, these values are determined by extremizing some kind of entropy function whose value at the extremum gives the entropy of the black hole. And as a result of this, the black hole entropy is independent of the asymptotic values of this moduli, because the moduli themselves near the horizon is independent of these asymptotic values. And this mechanism is known as the attractor mechanism and has been a subject of study for many papers. Now, it's also known that some of these properties generalize when we include a specific class of higher derivative terms in the theory, and these higher derivative terms are known as the generalized prepotential. These are what people call the protected terms or the F-type terms. But string theory, as we know, contains of course many higher derivative terms which are not of this type. And one would like to ask the question as to, do these properties survive when we add to the action a generic set of higher derivative terms instead of just the protected terms? Then one might ask, how essential is supersymmetry? Okay. Suppose we don't have any supersymmetry in the theory at all, can we still say something nice about extremal black holes? And finally, one might ask, are there analogous properties in higher dimensions? So these are the questions that we will try to explore in this talk. And throughout this talk, I'll be restricting my analysis to spherically symmetric extremal black holes. And although this analysis can be generalized to higher dimension, just for being brief, I'll focus mainly on the d equal to 4 case and then mention the generalization to higher dimension. So the first thing we need to do if we are trying to give up supersymmetry is to define what we mean by extremal black holes. Because normally in supersymmetric theories we can use the BPS condition to introduce extremal black holes. Here we don't want to use supersymmetry. So we use the properties of extremal black holes which are known to us from other considerations. And typically all known spherically symmetric non-singular extremal black holes in 4 dimensions are characterized by these 2 facts. First of all, they have near horizon geometry, ADS 2 times S2, and also all the other background fields in this for these black holes respect the SO2,1 times SO3 symmetry of the background ADS 2 times S2 space. So we'll restrict ourselves to black holes which satisfy these 2 properties. And also, what sometimes people worry about the definition of entropy of an extremal black hole, because there are some arguments that the entropy of an extremal black hole has to be given by a completely different formula than that of non-extremal black holes, and as a result of which the entropy is identically zero. So I will not go into those arguments by defining the entropy of an extremal black hole as the entropy of a non-extremal black hole in the extremal limit. And essentially what this will allow us to do is to use the usual formula for the entropy of non-extremal black holes, which are bifurcated event horizons, which are described by these authors in the early 90s, and I'll simply use this formula that they have derived for the case of extremal black holes. So here is the general setup. Okay, we will not, at least in the first half of the talk, we will not talk about string theory at all. We will consider an arbitrary general coordinate invariant theory of gravity coupled to a set of gauge fields, which I will denote by mu_i. This index I runs over several values. These are all abelian gauge fields, as you have mentioned, and a set of scalar fields which are neutral under this gauge field. And in this theory, we are looking for an extremal black hole, by which I mean that we are looking for a black hole solution whose near horizon geometry is consistent with the symmetry of ADS2 times S2. And we can write down the most general near horizon geometry of such a black hole, as I have here. So here is the matrix, here are the scalar fields, and here are the electric and magnetic fields at the horizon of the black hole. So the, as you can see, that the solution is parametrized by some, a set of constants, and the interpretation of these constants are as follows. V1 and V2 denote sizes of ADS2 and S2. US, these constants US, are simply scalar field values at the horizon. This is the radial magnetic field. And EI has the interpretation of the radial electric field. Now, we'll see that only these are not directly what gives us the charges. In fact, the radial magnetic field directly gives us what the charge is, but the electric charge is not exactly EI, because this is the electric field at the horizon, whereas to measure electric charge, you really need to measure it at infinity. But we just characterize the geometry by these quantities. So here I have written, displayed the same geometry again. So now suppose the Lagrangian density of this system is given by square root of minus determinant of G times L. Okay, I'll not assume anything about the Lagrangian density except that it's general covariant and gauge invariant. Now we want to introduce a couple of definitions. First, we define a function little f. This is a function of the parameters that characterize the near horizon geometry, namely u, v, e, and p. And this is simply the integral of the Lagrangian density over the angular coordinates, over the coordinates theta and phi. In fact, angular coordinates just produce a factor of 4 pi. Okay, so this is essentially the 4 pi times the Lagrangian density. Now, since the integration is being carried out only over the theta and phi coordinates, you might worry that perhaps this depends on the coordinate r, the radial coordinate. But one can easily show that L, when you evaluate this for the near horizon geometry, it does not depend on the radial coordinate. And the reason is simply that L is a scalar on ADS2 times S2, and any scalar on ADS2 times S2 must be a constant. So this defines a function little f. Now I define a set of variables qi, which are the derivative of little f with respect to the electric field ei, and a new function capital F, which is given here. So you would recognize these two equations as being the definition of what we normally call the Legendre transform. More precisely, capital F over 2 pi is the Legendre transform of the function little f with respect to the variables ei. qi are the variables conjugate to ei. And it is in fact this qi which correspond to the electric charges of the system. So you should remember the definitions of small f and capital F, because these are going to play an important role in what I am going to say. Okay? And the definition is not hard to remember. Little f is simply the integral of the Lagrangian density, and capital F is its Legendre transform with respect to the electric field variable. So here are the set of main results, which I'll not prove. In fact, I'll maybe indicate how it's proved and which I'll use. So the results are the following. If we have an extremal black hole in any theory of gravity coupled to scalar fields, if we have an extremal black hole with electric charge Q and magnetic charge P, then the near horizon values of all these parameters, the scalar field values, the sizes of ADS2 and S2, are obtained by extremizing this function capital F with respect to these variables. So you see now that Q and P, which are arguments of capital F, now refer to the electric and magnetic charges. So more precisely, the values of U and V are determined for a given Q and P by simply solving this equation. Second main result is that the near horizon electric field variables, EI, are given by the derivative of F with respect to QI divided by 2 pi. And finally, the most important part is that the black hole entropy, the entropy of this extremal black hole, is given simply by evaluating this same function F at the solution of this equation. Now, as I said, I'll not go into the details of how these equations are derived, but maybe I'll just indicate how the what goes into deriving this. So these equations, one can show, are simply a reflection of the scalar field equations and the metric equations near the horizon. This follows from the definition of Q, because if you remember, Q was the variable conjugate to E, so obviously E is the variable conjugate to Q under a Legendre transform, and this factor of 1 over 2 pi came because the definition of F included an additional factor of 2 pi. This one follows from the general formula. I mean, essentially this follows from the, by manipulating the general formula for the entropy, which was written down earlier, which I mentioned in a theory of gravity with higher derivative terms. And what one finds at the end of this analysis is that the black hole entropy is simply the same function F which you have to extremize to get the near horizon field configuration. So here I have emphasized the same point again, that the results are derived using equations of motion and Wald's formula for entropy in the presence of higher derivative terms in the action. I should emphasize that the derivation does not require the theory and or the solution to be supersymmetric. You can work with a non-supersymmetric theory or a BPS or non-BPS black hole in a supersymmetric theory. It does not depend on the structure of higher derivative terms. The only requirements are that the higher derivative terms are gauge and general coordinate invariance of the action. And finally, I should mention that although I have not derived it, similar results also hold in higher dimensions for extremal black holes which have near horizon geometry of the form ADS2 times SD minus 2. Okay. This typically is the geometry of the horizon for a higher dimensional spherically symmetric extremal black hole. So this is the statement of results. Now let's try to see how we can use this. So in a sense, these results lead to what one can call the generalized attractor mechanism, in the sense that the single entropy function F determines not only the values of the scalar field, which is usually what is called the attractor mechanism, but extremization of this function F also determines the sizes of ADS2 and S2. And as you have seen, this also determines the gauge field strength at the horizon, because all you have to do is to simply take the derivative of f with respect to the variable qi and divide the answer by 2pi. It also has some important consequence for the entropy, and that is as follows. First, let's suppose that f has no flat direction. If f has no flat direction, then when you extremize f, it determines u and v completely, right? Because you are supposed to extremize f with respect to the parameters u and v. So if it has no flat direction, it has a unique critical point, okay, as actually discrete set of critical points. So in the neighborhood of a given point, there is a unique solution. And this makes it clear that the black hole entropy, which is the function f evaluated at the critical point, is independent of the asymptotic values of the scalar field. But string theory is not like that. Okay, in string theory, there are scalar fields on which f doesn't depend. Okay. And these are what are normally called the hypermultiplied moduli fields. Okay. So what happens in those cases? Suppose f has flat direction in general, then extremizing f will not determine all the parameters u and v, because there are some directions in which f is flat, and anywhere on the along those directions you will get an extremum. So in this case, typically what would happen is that the location of u v along the flat directions will depend on the asymptotic values of the scalar field. However, since f is flat along those directions, by definition f does not depend on those directions. So the black hole entropy, which is the value of f at the extremum, is still independent of the asymptotic values of the scalar field. So whereas u and v can depend on the asymptotic values of the scalar field, f itself evaluated at the critical point does not depend on the asymptotic values of the scalar field, and hence we see that f is the entropy, which is just f, is independent of the asymptotic values of the scalar field. So this is as much as I will say for general implications. And now what I want to do is to discuss a specific example so that you see how this formalism can be used in calculating the entropy of extremal black holes. And you will see that essentially the problem of calculating the entropy of an extremal black hole or its near horizon geometry basically reduces to solving a set of algebraic equations. Okay? Because all you have to do is to first construct this function f and then extremize it. So I'll work with a specific example which is physically motivated, and this is the example of heterotic string theory on some arbitrary four manifolds times a product of two circles. We can choose M to be any compact space. We can choose it to be K3 or T4 or some orbifolds of this field, as long as it satisfies the classical equations of motion. And we want to consider a black hole solution in this theory, which has the following properties. It carries W units of the fundamental string winding along the circle S1, N units of momentum along the circle, same circle S1, and it also carries some magnetic type charges, in particular W tilde units of H monopole charge along the second circle S1 tilde. If you don't know what H monopoles are, you can also view it as having W tilde 5 brains wrapped on M times S1, and I'll also assign N tilde units of Kaluza-Klein monopole charge along this circle S1 tilde. And what we want to do is to calculate the entropy of the solution. So here is my convention. I'll set H bar equal to 1, C equal to 1, as usual, but also alpha prime equal to 16, which is perhaps not so usual. I'll take the coordinates x8 and x9 both to be periodic with period 2 pi square root of alpha prime, which in this case is 8 pi. So x8 is the coordinate along s tilde 1 and x9 is the coordinate along s1. So we want to study this black hole solution. But in order to study this black hole solution, you have to first understand what is the effective field theory that describes this solution. Now, in principle, we could have started by writing down the full effective field theory that in heterodic spin theory, compactified on this manifold. But typically what happens is that for a given black hole, only a certain set of fields are excited. And so it's more useful to begin with to first identify which are the fields which are going to be important for construction of the solution. And here I have introduced those fields in terms of the 10-dimensional field. Okay, it's perhaps not so instructive. All I wanted to point out here is that there are three scalar fields, okay, which are going to be relevant. The dilaton, the sizes of the two circles. This is the string frame matrix, and the gauge fields which come from the components of the matrix and the antisymmetric tensor fields along the 8 and the 9 directions. So here I have again listed the physical interpretation of the various scalar fields which are to be used. So S, the scalar field S is measures the inverse string coupling square. P measures the size of S1, P tilde measures the size of S tilde 1. MU1 and MU2 couples to the momentum and winding along the circle S1. And MU3 and MU4 couples to momentum and winding along the circle S tilde 1. So since the state that we are considering has momentum along S1 and winding along S1, we know that it should carry electric type charges under A1 and A2, and the normalization of the previous normalization that I used will be related to the normalization of N and W by this relation. Okay, this is something you can work out. I will not go through the details. Similarly, since our black hole is supposed to carry Kolbe-Kahn magnetic charge and H monopole charge along the circle S tilde 1, they carry magnetic type charge under the gauge fields A3 and A4, and here is the precise normalization, the relation between P3 and N tilde and P4 and W tilde. So the effective action that describes the dynamics of this field can be calculated at least in the supergravity approximation. So what I have written down here is the part of the effective action which comes out of the supergravity approximation. Looks a bit complicated, but it's not so if you just look at it a little carefully. Okay. And then of course there are all kinds of higher derivative terms. Okay. And we don't know the set of all the possible higher derivative terms that this theory could have. But this is the general structure of the effective action, and these are the various fields that we have introduced. 2 minutes. Okay. So we want to consider a solution in this theory which has this kind of near horizon geometry. So what we do is to simply ignore the higher derivative terms and simply evaluate the function f, okay, by integrating the Lagrangian density. And here is the answer. Okay, purely algebraic number. We take the Legendre transform of this. Okay. Here is the answer for the Legendre transform. You can recognize many of the terms here, okay, except that these have changed because these are to be expressed in terms of the conjugate variables. And there is a factor of 2 pi multiplying it that has made it into pi over 4. Okay. And now all you have to do is to extremize it with respect to these fields. Okay. Here is the result. The net offset of this is that the black hole entropy is exactly what we expect for a 4-charge black hole in this theory. Okay, you just evaluate the black hole entropy by evaluating this function at its extremum. Okay. So now, let me just consider the effect of adding some higher derivative terms because I want to illustrate how these calculations are done. So we just add the Gauss-Bonnet term. This is one of the higher derivative terms which you know is present in the theory. So you add this. This constant C is 1 for heterodic string theory, and since this appears at a C level, there is a factor of dilaton multiplying it. We can evaluate this Lagrangian density for the background that I have given. There is an additional contribution to this function f which is given here. and this induces an additional contribution to the function capital F after Legendre transform. And we have to simply redo the analysis with the corrected function F plus delta F. It's an absolutely straightforward algebra, and what we find at the end is a black hole entropy, which is of this form. Now you notice that if we set in this capital N tilde and capital W tilde equal to 0, we recovered the formula 4 pi times square root of NW. This is also what appeared in double quotes talk. However, the surprise is that the action that I am using here is not the same action that Dabholkar used. He used the supersymmetrization of the Weyl tensor square, whereas this simply uses a Gauss-Bonnet combination and nothing else. Okay. We'll see more of this in a few minutes. Okay. So now let's compare this. Yeah, just 2 minutes will be. Okay. So now let's try to ask what is known about the microscopic entropy counting. Okay. So we can do the microscopic entropy counting by mapping this problem, this heterotic string theory on KC times S1 times S1 tilde to M theory on Calabiau times S1. This was done by these people over here, and we find an answer which is exactly in agreement with the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy that we found earlier, okay, or with the generalized entropy that we found earlier. And the question is, why is it so? We should have needed the full set of alpha prime collections to reproduce the answer. Okay. And one might ask, is this an accident? Well, I don't know. Okay. Here are some notes on this. Okay. At first order in a power series expansion in NW inverse, this agreement in fact was found by Mullerson and Strominger and Witten, who just looked at an expansion. Okay, and their analysis agrees with what we give here. Cardoso, DeWitt and Mohawk considered a different set of terms in the action, which are obtained by supersymmetrizing the Weyl tensor square term, and they also reproduce exactly the same answer. And again one might ask, is this an accident? Well, I don't know. So there seem to be too many accidents in this field, and hopefully by the next superstring conference we'll know what's going on. Okay, so I don't have a summary, but since many people have given slogans for that talk, here is my slogan for this talk. Entropy is the Legendre transform of the Lagrangian density. Thank you.